time to spend on the bhava aspect of the bhajan. Who is the Tatreya? What does this avatar of the Lord signify? And what is it that we have to internalize as we sing this bhajan? So let's begin with the first line.
Datta Guru, Datta Guru, Dattatreya Guru.
So as the legend goes, in the timeless beginning, there was no earth, no sky, no planet, no universe, no being. It was all an infinite expanse of water, and on it was resting Lord Narayana. And then Lord Narayana wills that Brahmanda be created, the universe should happen. And so the Lord first creates the four-faced Brahma and entrusts him with the task of creation of both animate and inanimate beings. And out of Brahma's manas, or his mind, emerge seven sages, the Saptarishis. They are called Brahma Manasaputras because they have emerged from Brahma's mind. And one of these rishis was Atri Rishi. Now, Atri practiced severe penance for countless number of years, and then he attained Brahma Jnana, the ultimate knowledge. And later, at the instance of Brahma, sage Atri marries Anasuya, the daughter of Kardama Pajapati. And Anasuya was the embodiment of perfection. She was someone who was nobility personified. She was entirely, completely blemishless, and she had no malice against anyone, had overwhelming and motherly love for all, and she was an embodiment of chastity. In fact, her stellar virtues and her steadfastness to these principles was so great that her fame and her glory spread far and wide over the three worlds. And they say that even Indra, the Lord of the Heaven, felt all his power waning out in front of the splendorous sunshine of the rising glory and powers of Anasuya. Bhagwan used to mention how Asuya is the opposite of Anasuya. Asuya means jealousy. Anasuya is one who is completely welcoming of all, who is virtuous in every way. And here, once Anasuya's glory was increasing every day, Indra approached the three gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara, and said that we must do something to arrest the ever-increasing powers and glory of Anasuya. And so the gods say, okay, let's test Anasuya's purity. So the gods then transform themselves into mendicants, and they approach the hermitage of sage Atri, and they beg for alms. And at that time, sage Atri had gone to the river to offer his daily oblations. Anasuya came out, and he welcomed the three guests, and she extended hospitality to them. But now these three guests made a strange request. They said that the food that is being prepared for them has to be served to them by Anasuya, but with a condition. Anasuya should not be having any garments on her body when she serves the food to them. And Anasuya was very perplexed at such a strange and embarrassing, impossible condition. And she thought for a while what she should do. She cannot turn away the guests, because in Indian culture, Atithi Devo Bhava is a central tenet. The Atithi is a guest. There was no way she was going to displease or do anything to not live up to the demands of the guests. But this was such a difficult condition. And as she prayed and contemplated, suddenly a beautiful idea flashed in her mind. And she thought, if only these guests were babies, then I could feed them without donning a garment. And the moment she got this thought, such was the power of her pure mind and her chaste heart, that instantly all these three guests turned into babies. And then Anasuya gladly fed them all with her motherly love, and she was singing lullabies and nursing them and putting them to sleep in the cradle. When sage Atri returned home, to his amazement, he found Anasuya fondling these three beautiful babies and singing to them lullabies. And these lullabies were very special. These lullabies were on Upanishadic truths. And the moment sage Atri came, Anasuya rose and offered the children at the feet of her husband and said, "These are the Datta of God to us. They are the gift of God to us." And sage Atri was overwhelmed with joy. And immediately through his Divya Drishti, through his powers, he realized that these three children are not ordinary. They are the supreme gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara. And how fantastic is this inscrutable, beautiful Leela of the Lord. And he prays to them and says, "You are the infinite beings. You chose to become babes in our humble home just to fill us with light and delight. We have been childless and you have filled our hearts with so much joy. How blessed we are to fondle you." You know, tears of joy started welling out from the sage's eyes. The babies were bathed with his stream of joyful tears. And once this happened, immediately Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara assumed their normal forms and they said, "We are so pleased with both of you. Ask any boon that you want." And the couple said, "Oh Lord, let the joy that you gave us by being babies in our home a little while ago, can this joy become a lasting reality? Please make this humble cottage of ours your home. Give us the blessed opportunity to fondle you as our own children." And the gods were so happy. They said, "Your wish will definitely be fulfilled. In fact, we also do not know what is motherly love and fatherly love. The Lord is a father and mother of all, but the Lord is never a child to experience maternal affection and paternal love." And the Lord says that we also, in fact, enacted this entire drama so that we can experience the joy of a mother's love and the care of a father's affection. And that is how Brahma was born to Anasuya as Chandra, Lord Vishnu was born as Datta, and Maheshwara came as Durvasa. And these three children grew up under the fondling care of their parents. And with time, Atri Rishi performed their Upanayanam, the thread-changing ceremony. And after that, Chandra sought permission of his parents and then took his place in the skies and made sky his abode, which is now the moon. And Durvasa sought permission of the parents and he left home for pilgrimages and penance. And before both of them left, they merged their divine selves and their divine power into their brother Datta. And that is how Datta incorporated within himself the divine aspects and powers of each of the three trinities. And that is how Dattatreya is symbolized with three faces and six hands. And it is because of this reason that he came to be called as Dattatreya. Three is three. Dattatreya also means the one who gifted himself as son to Atri. So those are the beautiful meanings of the word Dattatreya. It was a divine birth. It was the fruit of the penance and the purity of Anasuya. It was the culmination of her virtues. It was the power of her chastity. It was a grand example of how powerful you can be if you are pure. You can convert even Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara into little babies in front of you if you are steadfast in your virtues. And Dattatreya symbolizes the fruit of those virtues, the fruit of what we call the human values, the fruit of adhering to truth, peace, dharma, right conduct, non-violence and peace. So that is why Dattatreya is such a very, very significant avatar of the Lord. He is the embodiment of all knowledge because He is the fruit of highest virtue. So in this line, we revere that principle of the Lord who is wisdom personified, who is the culmination of all human excellence in terms of purity, integrity and nobility. Let's move on to the next line.
Sai Natha Dina Natha Brahma Rupa Guru.
Of course, Dina Natha means the one who is the Lord of the distressed, Brahma Rupa Guru. Here we are referring to the Guru as the one who is the creator. In fact, this reminds me of a very beautiful incident. In 1980, Swami declared that there would be no Lingodbhavam that year, and a day before Shivratri, Swami called Mrs. Ratanlal and said, "You prepare curd rice and tamarind rice for 25 people, and as soon as everything is ready, you just inform me. I'm going to leave early morning and don't tell anyone." And as he gave this instruction to Mrs. Ratanlal, she said, "Swami, we have all come here for your darshan on Shivratri day, and now I am here with you, and you're going to go, I will not have the chance to see you on Shivratri day." And when she made this prayer, Swami said, "Okay, you also get ready. You come in the last car. You join the group." So by 2:30 a.m. everything was ready and she sent word to Bhagwan and she sat in the car and the group left. Swami had his tiffin near Mysore and his lunch in Mudumalai, and then Swami had decided to go to Ooty. The next morning, which was Shivratri day, Swami took the group for a picnic and Swami took them to Doddabeta, the highest point in Ooty. It was a very crowded location and Swami said, "Okay, we cannot be here because there are too many people." And then on the way down, Swami asked his car to go onto an unpaved road. And in fact, Mr. Radha Krishna, who was driving Swami's car, said, "Swami, this road is not proper." But Swami said, "Doesn't matter, you keep going." It was a very narrow road, but then eventually it widened into a clearing and there was all grass. Then suddenly Swami asked them to stop the car. So the cars came to a halt and everyone disembarked from the car, and then Swami asked Mrs. Ratanlal, "Do you have something for everyone to eat?" And immediately she unpacked the food that she had brought and she spread a carpet for Bhagwan and plastic sheets were laid out, and Swami took a stroll walking away from all of them while Mrs. Ratanlal was making the arrangements. And from a distance, Mrs. Ratanlal saw that Swami had raised his hand and he made an aerial gesture. It was as if he was plucking something from empty air. And not many actually saw, but Mrs. Ratanlal's eyes were all the time on Bhagwan. So she definitely saw Swami had picked something out of nowhere. And when Bhagwan came to her after 5 minutes, Swami handed over to her that crystal. It was the size of a paperweight. And Swami said, "Put it in your handbag." So immediately Mrs. Ratanlal took that crystal and she wrapped it in a handkerchief and kept it in her bag. And then food was served and Bhagwan took his plate and started eating. And after food, Swami again went for a walk. And now Mrs. Ratanlal thought, "I have to see what is this that Bhagwan gave me." So she took out the crystal from the handbag. And as she saw that, suddenly it flashed to her that, "Oh my God, this is exactly how the moon looks." Because she was in Geneva on the first day of the moon landing and she had seen on TV screens how the moon looked. Those pictures of the moon were very vivid in her, the pictures that were sent by the astronauts. And the moment that realization hit her, she started excitedly saying, "Oh my God, this is the moon, this is the moon." And Swami said, of course this is the moon." And she saw such a vivid image in the crystal. It was, there were beautiful, colorful streams. The colors were changing and they were glimmering. There were lush green fields on both sides of the stream. There was green grass spreading into meadows. And in the middle of the stream, to her utter delight in that beautiful crystal, she saw Swami standing there. And the crystal was the size of the large paperweight. And she was so excited. She said, "Swami, but in the pictures that the astronauts had sent, we had not seen all this." And Swami said, "Human eyes could see only rocky mountains." And then Swami said, "Keep quiet, don't talk anything more." And Mr. Jogarao was standing nearby and he said, "Swami," and Swami interrupted him. Swami said, "Jogarao, I will tell you who I am." And that's it. It ended there. Everyone returned back to where they were staying. And in the evening, when they were again sitting around Bhagwan, Swami asked Mrs. Ratanlal to narrate what she had seen during the day. And Swami told her, "Tell them what you saw." And after she narrated everything, Bhagwan was retiring. And that is when Jogarao went to Bhagwan and said, "Swami, you said in the morning that you will tell us who you are." And Swami immediately turned around and said, "Okay, you keep quiet." And Swami left, retired for the night. At 10:30 p.m., Swami sends word to Mrs. Ratanlal to pack up and get ready to leave. So, and Swami says, "You start packing the food, make breakfast, lunch, tiffin and dinner for all. And once it is done, you let me know." So she finished packing by 1 a.m. And then Swami asked her to check if there are not too many people on the road. So Mrs. Ratanlal goes out and there were people waiting for darshan early in the morning, 2:30. People had already queued up and Mrs. Ratanlal went to them and persuaded them to leave, saying that this is too early, Swami is not going to come, you know. You please leave now and come later as the day breaks. And that is how once she cleared the road, Bhagwan came down and the group left Ooty and they reached Mudumala at 5 a.m. And Swami went to his room to rest and Mrs. Ratanlal thought that, you know, Swami would come out by 7:30. And so she immediately made some breakfast and at 9 a.m. all of them were in the sanctuary and Swami was taking a Polaroid photographs with each member of the group. Polaroid photography is where you click and immediately see the print of what you have clicked. We are talking about 1980s. We didn't have digital cameras then. And so these Polaroid photographs were going on. And meanwhile, Mrs. Ratanlal was not there in the group. She was making some arrangements. One boy comes running to her and says, "Swami wants you, Swami wants you. Please come, please come." And so she goes there and she sees that Swami is granting individual photographs to everyone. And as that was going on, she noticed that Swami's robe was a bit crumpled. So instinctively, you know, she went to just straighten Bhagwan's robe and as she stretched her hand to do that, Swami angrily suddenly shouted at her and said, "Don't touch, don't touch, don't touch." And he said it with like so much of emphasis, annoyance, anger. Mr. Ratanlal was shocked, she was terrified. And then Swami took that undeveloped Polaroid photograph and then he started rubbing the photo face down on his right knee. And then like a child, Swami was repeating in a musical sort of way. Swami was saying, "Shall I tell you who I am?" And then after he had finished the rubbing and Swami showed the picture to all, it indeed was a picture that no one had ever seen before. It was the picture of Dattatreya and it was a picture where all the three faces were faces of Bhagwan. Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva were not there, but all the insignia and the awkward dress was there according to the scriptures. The Trishul was there and a dog was there which is supposed to be the vehicle of Dattatreya, but all the faces were Bhagwan's faces. And Swami said, "This is what I am." Swami had told Jogarao, "I'll tell you who I am," and this is what he created on that momentous morning way back in 1980. And this bhajan, when we are singing Sai Natha, Dina Natha, Brahma Rupa Guru, the Guru is Brahma. Here you have Bhagwan creating the moon out of nowhere. He is Brahma. And who is Sai? Sai is Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. He is Sai Natha. And to this Sai Natha, we offer ourselves in this second line, Sai Natha, Dina Natha, Brahma Rupa Guru. Let's move on to the next line.
Alakh Niranjana Bhava Bhaya Bhanjana ദത്താത്രേയ ഗുരു.
അലക് മീൻസ് ദ വൺ ഹൂ is beyond name and form, whom you cannot describe, who is invisible. Niranjan is blemishless. Bhava Bhaya Bhanjana refers to the one who cuts the fear of worldly existence. And then you have Dattatreya Guru. There's a very insightful incident that happened once in the Purnachandra Hall. It was a session that Bhagwan was granting to the students during winter vacations, and during that period, sometimes Bhagwan would grant the opportunity of watching a movie to the students. He would sit along with them and watch this film, and it was a Telugu film on Lord Dattatreya. So everyone's eyes were riveted on the screen, you know, as the story was going on, and there comes a scene where they watch Kartavirarjuna enter the hermitage of his later guru, Dattatreya. Kartavirarjuna, according to mythology, was directed by his mother to visit Dattatreya. His mother had told him that his true guru is Dattatreya. So he goes to the ashram of Guru Dattatreya. After years of search, he finally finds Lord Dattatreya. And now he's so happy because this is what his parents had said. This is what his penance has been, to find his guru, his god. And as he took that thorny track that led to the guru's ashram, you know, he was very tired, but he was so thrilled because finally he has reached the hermitage of Guru Dattatreya. And with every subsequent step, he felt so much peace, so contented, so fulfilled, because he had reached the end of his journey. But in a way, his journey had actually just begun. Because the moment he entered the ashram, he felt, oh my God, where have I come? Did I come to the wrong place? Because the entire ashram reeked of liquor and flesh. The guru himself was emanating a very foul odor, and he was surrounded by a horde of women. There was no sign of any holy Vedas. There was no chantings. It was just people were speaking the lowly language of cobblers. And he thought, oh my God, is it the great Dattatreya that my mother had spoken so highly about? Everyone here is so drunk. All the attendants also were drunk. But still, he goes near Dattatreya, and the moment he reaches there, one attendant comes and just pushes him, shoves him away, and he falls onto a pool of liquor. And he wonders, what is this? Where have I come? With a lot of difficulty, he gets up and he squeezes the liquor out of his garment, the water out of his clothes. And it was an humiliation too much for him to bear. But he wondered, is he not Dattatreya? This is what my mother had told me. He approaches again to the guru, and now, to his horror, the attendants of Dattatreya throw him out of the ashram. And he thinks, oh my God, what kind of a guru is this person? The scriptures say that a true guru rests not even for 100 births until his disciple has attained the ultimate reality. But here is a guru who is so different, and he has rejected me outright. Is he really Dattatreya? In fact, people who have been with Bhagwan can at some level relate to this, because there would be times when Bhagwan would avoid you. There would be times when you have praying so much and you know it is Bhagwan, but still your prayers are rejected. You are even told, don't enter the ashram. You are told, you have no more the opportunity to serve here. So many times you have prayed and prayed, but your prayers have just gone into oblivion and nothing has happened. It's like the God there is completely deaf. Something like that was happening here to Kartavirarjuna. But somehow he decided to cling on firmly. He went back to the guru and he continued to pray to him. Even though the guru was in his insane stupor, with faith he held on and he prayed. He was abused, he was ridiculed, he was even beaten, but he did not move. Just held on there. Come what may, because his mother had said that this is your guru, and he decided that he will not move until he has been given direction and self-realization, and he sits there and suddenly everything changes. Fragrance fills the air, the women change into rishis, and all the drunken attendants change into noblemen and holy men. And in the place of that grotesque looking guru, now there is a divine, effulgent form. And Dattatreya smiles at Kartavirajana and places his hand on his head. And in that moment, with that single touch, Kartavirajana attains Brahmajnana, the highest wisdom. And the interesting thing is, the moment this happened, the screen went blank. Bhagavan was seeing this movie with the boys. The movie stopped and Swami got up from his chair and Swami asked for the table and mics. And then Bhagavan rose to speak. He did not thunder. He did not say it with much ado. But then he did say it. Swami said, "I am Dattatreya." And he did not stop with that. He added, "Test is my taste." So that is what the guru does to us. Bhava Bhaya Bhanjana. He wants to break all the notions of worldly existence. He wants to break our ego. He wants to test our patience. He wants to see how resilient we are so that we can attain that state of Niranjana, blemishlessness. We can attain the one who is beyond name, beyond form, who is Alakha Niranjana. This is where the Guru takes us. The Guru never hurts us. The Guru always hurts our ego. And that is what is so beautifully conveyed in this line. Alakha Niranjana Bhava Bhaya Bhanjana Dattatreya Guru. And then the last two lines are just the words, Dattatreya Guru, Sainatha Guru. So this is such a powerful bhajan. We don't have many bhajans on Lord Dattatreya, but this is a bhajan which is urging us to be steadfast disciples, to follow on the path, come what may, and to know that the path to liberation is a path of purity, of integrity, of nobility and sincerity. Let's internalize these values and sing this bhajan with that kind of a feeling, then it will elevate us.